Peace be upon you. God willing, today we're going to read from the Quran, starting from chapter 2, verse 20, and God willing, ending at chapter 2, verse 29. I figure we'll read the verses first, and for that, I pulled from a website, submission.ws, where the creator of that website put together a very elegant recitation of the Quran in English. So, God willing, let's begin. We seek refuge in God from Satan the Rejected.
The lightning almost snatches away their eyesight. When it lights for them, they move forward, and when it turns dark, they stand still. If God wills, He can take away their hearing and their eyesight. God is omnipotent. O people, worship only your Lord, the one who created you and those before you, that you may be saved. The one who made the earth habitable for you, and the sky a structure. He sends down from the sky water to produce all kinds of fruits for your sustenance. You shall not set up idols to rival God, now that you know. If you have any doubt regarding what we reveal to our servant, then produce ones who are like these, and call upon your own witnesses against God if you're truthful. If you cannot do this, and you can never do this, then beware of the hellfire, whose fuel is people and rocks. It awaits the disbelievers. Give good news to those who believe and lead a righteous life, that they will have gardens with flowing streams. When provided with a provision of fruits therein, they will say, "This is what was provided for us previously." Thus they are given allegorical descriptions. They will have pure spouses therein, and they abide therein forever. God does not shy away from citing any kind of allegory, from the tiny mosquito and greater. As for those who believe, they know that this is the truth from their Lord. As for those who disbelieve, they say, "What did God mean by such an allegory?" He misleads many thereby, and guides many thereby. But He never misleads thereby, except the wicked. Violate God's covenant, after pledging to uphold it. Sever what God has commanded to be joined, and commit evil. These are the losers. How can you disbelieve in God when you were dead and He gave you life? Then He puts you to death. Then He brings you back to life. Then to Him you ultimately return. He's the one who created for you everything on earth, then turned to the sky and perfected seven universes therein. And He's fully aware of all things.
So hopefully you like those verses as much as I did. God willing, let's get started talking about them, starting from verse 20. In verse 20, we read that the lightning almost snatches away their eyesight. When it lights for them, they move forward. And when it turns dark, they stand still. If God wills, He can take away their hearing and their eyesight. God is omnipotent. One thing to point out is that he and she in Arabic don't necessarily imply gender. This is just a shortcoming of the English language. So when we read God in the masculine sense is he, this isn't actually what's written in Arabic. It's just the best English translation. It's also important to point out that when it says God can take away their hearing and their eyesight, that some people might ask, well, why would God do this if God is most gracious, most merciful? And the fact of the matter is, it's ultimately it's our choice. Whatever choice we decide, God allows us to carry on in that choice. And this is spelled out in chapter 19, verses 75 and 76, where we read, say, "Those who choose to go astray, the Most Gracious will lead them on until they see what is promised for them, either the retribution or the hour. That is when they find out who really is worse off and weaker in power." And 1976 reads, "God augments the guidance of those who choose to be guided, for the good deeds are eternally rewarded by your Lord and bring far better returns." So we see in these verses that basically those who choose to go astray, that God leads them on in that decision. And same thing with those who choose to be guided, that God reveals basically the signs for them to encourage, increase their faith. Ultimately, it's our choice if we side with God or we side against God. And this is completely up to us. And the outcome of it is going to be determined by our decision. And this is spelled out in chapter 33, verse 72, where we read about the freedom of choice that God has given humankind. It reads, "We have offered the responsibility, freedom of choice to the heavens and the earth and the mountains, but they refused to bear it and were afraid of it. But the human being accepted it. He was transgressing ignorant." So here we see that basically all the creatures of God, with the exception of the human being, refuse the responsibility for the freedom of choice. They're actually afraid of it. But the human being, we were ignorant and also a bit arrogant, and we accepted the freedom of choice. So now we're in this world and we're free to choose. And depending on our decision, we're either going to see the blessings of God or basically the absence of God, which is retribution. So God willing, let's move on to verse 22. Verse 22 reads, "The one who made the earth habitable for you and the sky a structure, and sends down from the sky water to produce all kinds of fruits for your sustenance. And yet you shall not set up idols to rival God, now that you know." It's a real miracle in the Quran. Some of the scientific observations that are made that God points out, such as the sky structure. In chapter 21, verse 31 through 32, God explains more in regards to the sky being a structure. In verse 32, it says, "And we rendered the sky a guarded ceiling, yet they are totally oblivious to all the portents therein." So God has created the sky as a structure, a guarded ceiling. And this is clearly obvious by the fact that our atmosphere burns up a lot of debris that's in the solar system. And if it didn't, we would be, basically the surface of Earth would resemble a lot of what the surface of the moon looks like. And it's a real blessing in that sense. In addition, our atmosphere, it blocks out a lot of harmful rays that are emitted by the sun. Coincidentally, all the UV gamma rays, the vast majority of those, are filtered through our ozone. But the ones that are beneficial for life, such as the visible light, is allowed to pass through freely. And this is what's used for like photosynthesis and other advancements without being detrimental to organisms. In verse 22, we also read about the earth being habitable. And there's a lot of great literature out there about the uniqueness of planet Earth. Two books that I'd recommend, one is The Privileged Planet and the other one is Rare Earth, where we read basically not only is the Earth perfectly sustainable for life, but it also aids in the benefit of advancement of sciences. For example, Earth is the only planet in the entire solar system that has a perfect solar eclipse. And we can get into detail as far as the benefits of that, God willing, in another podcast, but definitely worth checking out both these books. In verse 23, a challenge is basically offered to the human being. It says, "If you have any doubt regarding what we revealed to our servant, then produce one surah like these and call upon your own witnesses against God if you're truthful." So it's interesting to point out that this surah, chapter 2, is an Aleph Lam Mim initial surah. If you count all the alephs, all the lams, and all the memes in this chapter, you get 9,899, which is a multiple of 19. That's why the challenge is to produce one surah like these, where it uses a singular for the surah, but then it says these in the sense that there is, I believe, five chapters with the Aleph Lam Mim as the opening initial. In the servant that it's referring to, it says, "You have any doubt regarding what we revealed to our servant?" Is clearly spelled out as Rashad Khalif, as we discussed in the previous podcast. It's interesting that people thought of this challenge for the longest time as literary work, and they didn't understand the mathematical structure of the Quran and how this basically increases the complexity far, far beyond what any human being can possibly create. And it's a similar challenge is in chapter 10, verse 38, where we read, "If they say he fabricated it, say, then produce one surah like these and invite whomever you wish other than God if you're truthful. And again, this is an Aleph Lam Ra, ALR chapter. And again, it uses the phrase, then produce one surah like these, since there is, I believe, about six or so Aleph Lam Ra chapters. God willing, we can double check that, but just off the top of my head. In verse 25, we read about the allegorical description of paradise. It says, give good news to those who believe and lead a righteous life, that they will have gardens with flowing streams. They, when provided with the provisions of fruits therein, they will say, this is what was provided to us previously. Thus, they are given allegorical descriptions, and they will have pure spouses therein, that they abide therein forever. So allegory is basically a way of describing something that you've never experienced. And I'll give you an example. If you've never had chocolate before, and I was to describe it to you, I'd have to use a sense of allegory. I'd describe the taste, the consistency. But until you actually try chocolate, you'd never know what it's like. Similarly, heaven, God describes it to the human being in allegorical sense, in the sense of fruits and provisions and spouses. But these are only a way of us to get a taste for what it's like. We won't really be able to tell what heaven's like until we, God willing, experience it for ourselves. And in 32:17, it reads, you have no idea how much joy and happiness are waiting for you as a reward for your righteous works. So further clarification that heaven is beyond our comprehension. In verse 26, there is a phrase that says, what did God mean by such an allegory? When it says God does not shy away from citing any kind of allegory, from the tiny mosquito and greater. As for those who believe, they know that it is truth from their Lord. As for those who disbelieve, they say, what did God mean by such an allegory? This same expression occurs twice in the Quran. Once is in chapter 2, verse 26, which we just read. The other one is in chapter 74, verse 31, when it's talking about the mathematical miracle of the Quran. Interesting thing to point out is that 74 plus 31 plus 2 plus 26 is 133, which is 19 times 7. If you add just the chapters, 2 plus 74, you get 76, which is 19 times 4. And if you add just the verses, verse 26 and verse 31, you get 57, which is 19 times 3. Furthermore, if you add the number of verses in chapter 2 plus the number of verses in chapter 74, you get 286 plus 56, which is equal to 342, which is 19 times 18. Then if you get the number of verses from chapter 2, verse 26 to chapter 74, verse 31, that totals 5,491, which is 19 times 289. God willing, someone can confirm the last bit of information. I did a quick count, and I double-checked, but it's also always good to verify the information. In verse 27, we read, who violate God's covenant after pledging to uphold it, sever what God has commanded to be joined and commit evil. These are the losers. I have a theory in regards to what this means to sever what God has commanded to be joined. And I believe it has to do with the contact prayers. If you think about it, Satan wants to basically sever us from doing the contact prayers, from making contact with our Creator. And in chapter 13, verse 19, it reads, is one who recognizes that your Lord's revelations to you are the truth equal to one who is blind? Only those who possess intelligence will take heed. They are the ones who fulfill their pledge to God and do not violate the covenant. They join what God has commanded to be joined, reverence their Lord, and fear the dreadful reckoning. They steadfastly persevere in seeking their Lord, observe the contact prayer salat, spend from our provisions to them secretly and publicly, encounter evil with good. These have deserved the best abode. So again, we're seeing that the believers, they join what God has commanded to be joined, and they observe their contact prayers. So this might be an inclination that the two are related. In addition, if you read verse 25 about the disbelievers, it says, as for those who violate God's covenant after pledging to keep it and sever what God has commanded to be joined and commit evil, they have incurred condemnation, they have incurred the worst destiny. So I think the people who choose not to do their contact prayers are severing that connection which God is basically commanding us to perform. In verse 28, we read about the two deaths and two lives for the disbelievers. This is, how can you disbelieve in God when you were dead and he gave you life? Then he puts you to death. Then he brings you back to life. Then to him you ultimately return. So for the disbelievers, they actually experience two deaths. The righteous, on the other hand, only experience the first death that took place prior to coming here on earth. For the righteous, after this life, they go straight to heaven. When their interim on this earth comes to an end, the angel of death simply invites them to go to the same paradise where Adam and Eve once lived. And some of the verses to back this up are chapter 2, verse 154, chapter 3, 169, chapter 8, 24, chapter 22, 58, chapter 16, 32, chapter 36, verses 20 through 27, chapter 44, verse 56, in chapter 89, verses 27 through 30. Thus, while the righteous experience only the first death following our original sin, the unrighteous go through two deaths. And this is seen in chapter 40, verse 11. At the time of the death, the disbelievers know their miserable fate. Then they suffer a continuous nightmare that lasts until hell is created. And there's further verses for that in chapter 40, verse 46 and 89, 23. So, let's start from chapter 40, verse 11, about the disbelievers suffering two deaths. It reads, they will say, the disbelievers, our Lord, you have put us to death twice, and you gave us two lives. Now we have confessed our sins. Is there any way out? Verse 12 reads, this is because when God alone was advocated, you disbelieved. But when others were mentioned beside him, you believed. Therefore, God's judgment has been issued. He is the Most High, the Great. So here we read that the disbelievers are asking God why they were put to death twice. In 44:56, in contrast, we read, they do not taste death therein beyond the first death. And this is talking about the righteous. And he has spared them the retribution of hell. This is also a theme that's common in the Old Testament and New Testament. In the Old Testament, in Proverbs 19, chapter 19, verse 16, it reads, those who keep the commandment will live. Those who are heedless of their ways will die. So again, it's saying that those who basically keep the commandment will live, while those who go astray die. And then in Revelations chapter 2, verse 11, it reads, if you have ears, then listen to what the Spirit says to the churches. Those who win the victory will not be hurt by the second death. And God describes in the Quran the victory as basically making it to paradise. And finally, for the last verse in verse 29, it reads, he is the one who created for you everything on earth, then turned to the sky and perfected seven universes therein, and he is fully aware of all things. So it's just a fact that according to Quran, our universe, with its billion galaxies spanning distances of billions of light years, is the smallest of innermost of seven universes. And we see this in chapter 41, starting from, I believe, verse 9. It reads, say, you disbelieve in the one who created the earth in 2 days, and you set up idols to rank with him, though he is Lord of the universe. He placed on it stabilizers, mountains, made it productive, and he calculated its provisions in 4 days to satisfy the needs of all its inhabitants. Then he turned to the sky when it was still gas and said to it and to the earth, come into existence willingly or unwillingly. They say, we come willingly. Thus, he completed the seven universes in 2 days and set up the laws for every universe. And we adored the lowest universe with lamps and placed guards around it, such as the design of the Almighty, the Omniscient. It's one of the confusions people have when they hear about the sixth day of creation is the fact that they say, you know, it doesn't make sense. How is there a day when God didn't even create the sun and the earth yet? And these are just basically, you can think of it as a yardstick, such that the complexity of creating the physical universe, the stars, the planet, the universal laws of physics, was half as complex as calculating the provisions for all the inhabitants, for every single creature that resides here on Earth. And it's just a way of kind of grasping the complexity of the two. So God willing, we're going to stop there. As always, if you have any questions, you can reach us, God willing, at QuranTalk@gmail.com. The recitation was from submission.com. Submission.ws, and if you want to read a translation of the Quran online, Submission.ws has one, and also QuranAlone.com. Till next time, peace and God bless.